coronavirus. That's cdc.gov/coronavirus. Remember, the best way to prevent the spread of COVID-19 is to wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. If soap and water are not readily available, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer with at least 60% alcohol. Keep your distance from others of at least 6 feet. Cover your mouth and nose with a cloth face cover when around others. Cover coughs and sneezes with your sleeve, not your hands. Clean and disinfect the spaces around you. This has been a public service announcement from Stony Brook University and WUSB-FM.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook at 90.1 FM and 107.3. For those of you who don't like the lower part of the dial, it's 6 o'clock, time for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, actually. It's, another week in isolation.
Yeah, relative isolation, but feeling more connected than ever.
Yeah.
Very, very active, keeping busy, right?
Yeah,
keeping
we're doing that. We're getting good at it. I'd say, it's getting easier. It's getting easier to put on these radio shows from remote locations.
To say nothing of masks.
Yeah, I finally figured out how to put my mask on without falling off.
It's like a routine. It's like your socks and everything else you wouldn't want to forget.
I only
leaving the house.
Figured out socks fairly recently, too. But,
well, I'm sure some of our listeners can relate.
There are days, though, where you just don't go out at all. You know, you have a stockpile of food, leftovers, and it's kind of nice, but... You know, you go outside. I'm not saying you become a shut-in, but you don't go outside into the community. And
away from your yard.
Yeah, I prefer to go into the community, but if my actions of not going into the community help make the community safer, I've heard this for years, but now it seems to apply to everybody. if that helps, then that's something I take pride in. You know, I want to help.
And I like the broadcasting. We heard people broadcasting last week on this very station from their backyards. And, we've been down the street for weeks now. And we're just feeling more connected to our own radio station community. And, of course, listeners calling in, sharing via email or however they can what their experience is like, I think has been really good for building a little bit of camaraderie in our mutual isolation.
Yeah, absolutely. You're hearing all kinds of interesting things on WUSB. In fact, it's you can do more. You can do radio like you've never done before, from remote places. Just adding in content that you wouldn't be able to add in before. Yeah, like birds in a backyard. That's a pretty cool thing to have. We don't have birds, we do have birds, but we're not outside, so you don't hear the birds.
No, and not in this area either. There's just mostly industrial traffic and machinery. Although we embrace the natural world in our remote location.
Well, don't give away our location.
No, I wouldn't do that.
Now they know we're in an industrial section.
Stop. Just... Okay. But maybe they'll not listen to this part and they'll just jump in because we started talking about the cargo launch tomorrow. With NASA.
Cargo launch?
Yeah, they're sending cargo up. And I heard...
Oh, they're still doing that?
On the 27th, yeah. They're going to actually put humans up on an American rocket.
Human beings?
Yeah. For the first time since the space shuttle completed in 2011.
So they're going to do that in the middle of all this?
In the middle of all this, it is essential to fly some experimental...
It's essential to get off the planet.
Test pilots, yeah. They're,
wow. Okay.
They're being, quote... brave.
I hear there's a line out the door for Mars missions. People just want to get out of here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. Well, you know, if that's on TV, I'll watch it.
Yeah, I just bought tickets for Avenue 5. I'm going to be going on Judd Enterprise. Can't wait.
Anything like that. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Speaking of TV, did you see Barack Obama's commencement address?
I heard he body slammed somebody with words.
Well, because he knows how to finish a sentence. There's that.
So. I always revered him for that.
You know, it's such a relief to hear somebody that can actually speak intelligently and coherently. And I'm sorry if saying that annoys people who aren't of his political party. It doesn't matter. I would say the same thing for anybody if they were saying things that made sense. And we need that. We need that now more than ever. And people who choose to make that a divisive issue... Boy, I don't know where your heads are at. Now,
I don't think it compares to how much that impact has on people who really have missed that.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, okay, that reaction may be one thing, but it's stirring to hear such contrast in some outspokenness.
Yeah, this is what we need. This is when leadership and government support is needed. A lot of us are feeling pain right now. A lot of pain, financial pain, mental pain. And that is why you need to have a support network. You need to have a system in place that will be there when you start to fail. That is the whole purpose of having a government. And for those people who, for some reason, don't want that, I question, what do you want? You just want to live in the wild frontier and
never be happy anyway,
pick people off with your guns?
Yeah, yeah.
It's insane. It's ridiculous. You know, we saw that last week here on Long Island. In fact, the whole world saw that. It's crazy how this story has developed. Because 2 weeks ago, on both radio shows, in fact, we played a piece from News 12. We've never done that before. We played a piece because it was so relevant to what was going on.
And close to home.
Very close to home. It was in that god-awful place called Comac. I'm sorry for insulting the good people of Comac. It's just that you have so many bad people in Comac. You know, years ago, they successfully got a bunch of immigrant kids out of the basement of a church because they were afraid that those kids were somehow going to be a threat to them. But in reality, they just didn't like immigrants. And now this.
Or people sticking up for immigrants.
Yeah, they had these demonstrations, or one demonstration against the pandemic shutdown, which, when you think about it, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. That was the story 2 weeks ago. The story last Thursday was a follow-up demonstration where the demonstrators actually started to threaten the reporter that was covering the event for News 12. News 12, for God's sake. And what happened was it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing because, you know, this is my home. This is Long Island. This is where I come from. And to see people act in such an idiotic way, it's shameful. It really is. So there was a reopen New York rally again in Comac. And to make it even better, it was organized by a bunch of people known as the Setauket Patriots. Now, these are those fools who gather once a week on the corner of Bennett's Road and Route 25A in Setauket. I'm not saying anything that isn't already known. And they basically gather there. I don't know if they're stupid enough to gather there now during a pandemic. They probably are. But they gather every week to protest for, I don't know what they're protesting for. More war? More right-wing agenda? I don't know what it is that they are still so angry about when they have gotten so much that they want. I do know that on the other side of the street, there had been a demonstration. There might still be a demonstration. Hopefully they're smart enough not to gather during a pandemic. But it was an anti-war demonstration. And I think what happened was these Setauket Patriot people formed as a direct result of the anti-war movement. So they're basically a pro-war movement. Waving a lot of flags, saying a lot of Trump-type things. So they're the ones who organized this Comac demonstration. I don't know how or why they did that. Probably because people in Setauket are too intelligent to have a demonstration like that in Setauket, which, by the way, is the next town over from Stony Brook, so it's very close to us. So they organized this rally in Comac. It was also endorsed by these really hateful people known as the Oath Keepers. Remember the Oath Keepers?
I do.
Yeah, they're the ones that rolled into Missouri during the anti-cop shooting black people protests. They rolled in there to protect people from, I guess, the minorities that they were so afraid of. Yeah, basically they're not nice people. Let's just put it that way. So anyway, they were involved in this as well. They worked together, and the protest took place outside a shuttered department store. Just a few hundred people showed up. There's a lot of people though. When you need to keep your distance to stay safe, you know, it really is not a smart thing to do to have a few hundred people gather like that. But the reporter Kevin Vasey from News 12. Found himself the target of their ire. One of his tweets said, "The level of anger directed at the media from these protesters was alarming. As always, I will tell a fair and unbiased story today." And, you know, that is something that struck me from his last report, the one we played a couple of weeks ago. He let them talk. He let these people say things in their own words. And apparently that annoyed them because they sounded like real idiots. But they were speaking themselves. They were the ones saying that they're not going to take any vaccines. They're the ones saying that they're perfectly safe standing here next to other people because everyone's responsible for themselves. You know, they're the ones accusing Cuomo of God knows what for doing what's right and doing what's safe. And that is what played over News 12 and over our airwaves as well. And apparently they didn't like that. I don't know what else they could have wanted.
Yeah, that's what struck me is that, and your point, that they're sort of almost embarrassed when their message does get out. But the excruciating irony of them trying to lambast a media practitioner who himself is giving them a platform to get their message out. It's really dumb, just like how they sound.
Well, the protesters, basically, what was scary about this, if you watch it, it's on YouTube, Facebook, the uncensored version, because you can't air this on TV. But all these people lined up basically spouting Trump talking points. And it was like they were being churned out by a 3D printer. You know, these people were saying the exact same things. You're fake news. Fake news is not essential. You're the virus.
Yeah, I'd be more impressed if there was an original thought in the mix.
They were mad at News 12 because they air the Cuomo hearings or briefings that take place every day. By the way, we air them too now, every weekday at 3 p.m. And weekends at a different time. I don't know what that is offhand, but it's important. It's relevant to what we are doing here on Long Island. Very relevant. We are in the epicenter of this thing, and it changes day to day, which is why it's so important for this to get out there. So they're mad because News 12 dares to air the governor of the state that they're in and doesn't give enough airtime to Trump. That is what they're mad about. And that apparently their unedited comments are aired over the same channel. Now, in case you don't know, Suffolk County, that's where we are right now, they've been among the worst hit in the entire United States. In fact, in the world, I would say. 37,942 confirmed cases of COVID-19. 1,733 deaths as of Saturday. So, our county, just under 1.5 million people, has a mortality rate more than four times the national average. And one of the cases of COVID-19 was Basie himself. He tested positive last month. Did you know that?
No, I didn't actually.
He doesn't mention it. He recently recovered from a relatively mild case of the illness. Went right back out there to report on the story. Now, during that Facebook Live report from the demonstration, Basie was menaced at close range by a man in a Trump hat and a shirt who was not wearing a mask, but said he did not need to keep his distance because I got hydroxychloroquine. I'll be fine, bro. Did I say it right this time?
Yeah, that was close enough.
Okay, good. Yeah, hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I'm talking about, but that drug that Trump is touting with
90%.
Absolutely no medical backup whatsoever. So this guy says, yeah, I got hydroxychloroquine. I can come near you. I can threaten you because I'm taking a fake drug. I'll call it a fake drug.
Yeah, bro, I
believe I'm safe.
You sound like a third grader talking about superpowers, okay?
Another guy was holding a sign that said, hang Fauci, hang Gates, open up all our states. Really? Advocating lynching? That's what we're doing here in Comac? Incredible. What if you hung up a sign saying, hang Trump? What would happen to you then? Oh, you can't do that. No.
Ask Kathy Griffin.
You can't do that. But you can threaten violence with all these other people who are just doing their job. Fauci? How is Fauci an enemy of anybody? I don't get that. And this is a guy who is part of the Trump administration. This is what I'm talking about, where you listen to people who make sense regardless of political affiliation. Don't listen to a politician. Don't let the politician tell you what to do. Listen to a politician who listens to somebody who knows what they're talking about if that's the way the message is getting out. But ultimately, listen to the doctors. Listen to the scientists. Listen to the people who understand this.
Not the mental contortionists.
No, it's not a political issue. How did Republicans turn this into a political issue? Yeah, it sounds like I'm making it a political issue by saying, how did Republicans do this? But that's a fact. They did. They turned this into a political issue. And
because they need a boogeyman to deflect the due blame. I mean, it's the same response I get when I hear Navarro talking about global transnational capitalists doing what they do. I mean, yeah, these companies offshored for the pennies and profits, and we are feeling the effects. Don't sit around and get blue in the face at me about it. I mean, and other people who are workers. These are boardrooms making these decisions. So where does that fit? That fits squarely with the corporate leadership and largesse of the Republicans' alleged domain. All your efficiencies got you this far, so now you need someone else to blame because it's killing people.
Well, like I said, this is an embarrassment. But you know what was interesting is that James Robitsek, he's the leader, or one of the leaders of the Setauka Patriots, they posted an apology. They posted an apology on their Facebook page. This is what they said. Kevin, the Setauka Patriots group would like to apologize on how you were treated. This wasn't a Trump event, but an Open Up New York rally, and we invited all Long Islanders to attend. We can tell you that the few who decided to harass you and try to prevent you from doing your job are not members or affiliated with the Setauka Patriots group in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, at that moment, I would say, okay, I don't agree with what you're doing, but at least you're not advocating the kind of threats, violence, harassment that these idiots engaged in. But then the idiot in chief weighed in and started praising those very same people over Twitter. And that went viral. That went all around the world. And guess what? The apology vanished from Facebook. So Setauka Patriots, whatever inkling of respect might have been planted in the apology, all gone now. All gone now.
I wish I could say that there aren't more groups like this, but I know there's a lot in the West Coast, too. My home state of Washington, there's a lot of insanity and hysteria coming from groups like this.
It's growing.
As well.
It's growing. And here's another thing. It's not just uninformed people in the streets that subscribe to conspiracy theories. It's elected officials, too. Republican lawmakers right here in Suffolk County wrote a letter to Albany, to Cuomo, demanding that Governor Cuomo immediately lift any executive order that prevents small businesses from operating. And listen to this quote. This is priceless. They say, "Most of us know someone who has died as a direct result of COVID-19 infecting their body. But what of those who are suffering with devastating economic hardship?" And they want a response within the week. Okay, I can answer that right now. What of people suffering devastating economic hardship? It sucks for them. It sucks for us. We're going through it as well. But you know what sucks more? Getting COVID-19 and dying from it. And those people who are suffering economic hardship are not sick with COVID-19 because of the steps that have been taken. So what is it you're advocating? That we open up businesses before we're ready to do this, before it's safe, and have more people get sick, more people die? Because that's what it sounds like. I don't see any other way to interpret that. Do you think Cuomo, for some reason, wants to shut down the economy and make all small businesses fail? What possible logic is behind that? It makes no sense.
The other disconnect is they're picking the one thing that we ought not to do because of health and public safety. So there's really no other alternatives being presented, no relief, no plans. It's just we did that. We think it's enough, and we'll accept whatever consequences if we're wrong, or deflect them depending on what you think will actually go down. But it just seems funny that they can't accept that there's these limitations that have helped us and could continue to help us, but even though they are, they want to accept whatever negative might come from going back to something that means people will have some kind of normalcy when we still have so many questions that we don't have answers to as far as treatments and so forth, to say nothing of what we do know about how contagious it is.
Yeah. You think the virus has changed. Look at how in early March there were a handful of people with this. A handful. Look how quickly it spread.
With mitigation steps.
And so many people were infected. So many people died. Why would that be any different today? If you just go back to the way things were then, and another handful of people got the disease, what makes you think that somehow, because we've been through it before, we're going to be okay this time? It's not how it works. That's not how the virus is not political. The virus doesn't think the way you do. It doesn't think at all. It just spreads. It just kills. It just continues to do what a virus does.
And don't forget, we're still waiting another week or two for the initial incubation period when we relieved a little bit of the stay-at-home orders with that, quote, you know, the phase one and the sort of early reopenings. It started in Georgia on that Friday, I think 3 weeks ago, but, you know, we'll have another week or two until we really feel kind of like how the last weekend or two was with more people going out. So we may see spikes, we may see changes, and that's when we have to retreat. That is what the experts have been saying. We need to retreat from these orders, not just go full bore into something that might help people's numbers short term, but could really hurt them.
Yeah, and
over the long term.
The thing is, there's no guarantee either way. If you observe certain precautions, you may well keep the spike down. You may level it. You may even reduce it. But then again, you may not. And the odds of that happening go way, way up if you don't have it under control. So that's why jumping the gun on this thing is a really, really bad idea. I hope Georgia does okay. I really do. Texas, I know, is not doing okay. They have the largest number of cases recorded over the weekend. So you have to be sure about this before you take those steps. It's got nothing to do with politics. But expect to see the narrative change. Expect to see basically blame shifted. There's no doubt, there's no question that we missed the boat in January and February. We could have been doing so much more. Trump did not take it seriously. That is a fact. You can refute that if you want, but the facts are not on your side. There's so much evidence, there are memos and meetings and his own words. Oh yeah, we'll have this thing wiped out in a week. There's only, five people that have it, so nothing to worry about. Okay, by the time he finally got the message, it had really, really gotten out of control. But how is he going to play this? He's going to try to blame somebody else. He's blaming Obama, for God's sake. Obama hasn't been in office since 2017, and somehow this is his fault, and his supporters are lapping it up. The other person, of course, is Cuomo, because Cuomo's a Democrat, so you got to blame him. And they're going to try and change the narrative. They already are changing the narrative to Cuomo and the nursing homes, how he killed people in nursing homes. You might have heard that.
Diverted people to nursing homes.
And I'm not saying Cuomo has done everything right. He's made mistakes as well, but he owns up to the mistakes he makes. There's no question about that. And we have a train going by. Okay. Yeah, I guess I should have mentioned that one of the ways we stay sane is to have a big video screen that for some reason we watch the Amtrak station in Flagstaff, Arizona, and every time a train goes by, it's like a train is going right by the house. So.
Oh, that's not the neighborhood train from our remote studios.
No. I haven't seen a train on those tracks for a while. But what are they hauling? That's kind of interesting looking cars there. All right, well, I guess you don't know either. So they are trying to blame Cuomo for basically mishandling this. And every politician has mishandled it in one way or another. There's no question about that. That's one thing I think people on the left are capable of saying, is that their side gets it wrong, too. The problem with people on the left is that they get so fixated in evening scores with the people close to them that they forget about the people they're truly opposed to. So they basically destroy themselves, and the other side just rolls right in and gets their way. Yeah, people on the left, Democrats, screw this up as well. But nothing nothing on the order of what has been done by Trump.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about, or he talks about his ban on China, but of course that has been debunked by the evidence of travelers from Europe causing most of the spread that we saw on the Atlantic and Eastern seaboard here. So that was a very specific action that was taken in response that led, that was mostly symbolic because of his own Sinophobia or hatred of China from an economic perspective. And really, as I said before, that's mostly boardroom stuff.
See, I would give him credit for cutting off flights from China if it applied across the board, but it only applied to Chinese citizens. Americans who are coming from the same place, you're fine. That's not how it works. In addition to not being political, viruses aren't nationalistic either. They don't know the difference. So if you're just going to allow people that are of a certain nationality to come in and not be tested, not be quarantined, you're going to have problems. When Trump banned flights from Europe, we were upset at that. The reason we were upset at it was because it excluded certain countries that spoke English, as if somehow those countries couldn't possibly carry the virus. So there's all this xenophobia and racism at play here, because only foreigners who speak different languages are dirty enough to spread the virus. And, of course, China has to be blamed because they basically have sewage in the street and they're filthy people. And that's what you're hearing without them saying it directly.
And the level of caution was not there at all. There were so many reports of people coming back. I mean, it was not a proper repatriatizing of people who had been abroad and were coming back.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a sort of nationalistic thing, as you said. And then the individuals who had been traveling but were entitled to come back to their home country were not scrutinized like the people getting off the Diamond Princess. You had Canada there specifically attending to Canadians who were on that ship. This was not going on at airports. It was just welcome back, go back home, and no temperature screenings, no nothing. I mean, that's not exactly, that's just business as usual. That wasn't a quarantine for people you're repatriating. Because there will be no further travel thereafter, et cetera, and so forth. But again, there's critique that can go all around. Same with, I think, Cuomo and the nursing home situation. But I don't know. There's aspects of that, I think, that don't really compare in effect. And I'm sure he'd be the first to admit, as I think you alluded to.
Cuomo would.
Yeah,
he would.
They made mistakes early on with some of that, but given how much spread can happen in confined places like institutions, penitentiaries, and nursing homes.
Keep in mind that the restrictions, the problems, a lot of them come about through resources, through lack of resources. So basically, I don't want to give this short shrift, so let's focus on it for a moment at least. The policy in New York allowed nursing homes to accept COVID-19 positive patients back into nursing homes because state officials said they couldn't discriminate against those who tested positive. And there was fear that hospitals would run out of beds for new incoming patients, right? Right here at Stony Brook, they built a hospital on the athletic fields because of that fear. That was a real fear. The lack of resources was a real thing.
Still is.
Absolutely, and we could very well need that. Now, I know you're gonna see people mocking New York for building things they didn't need. Can you imagine? Mocking us for building a hospital that we wound up not using, as opposed to not having enough hospital beds? That was the real fear. And the fact that this was built so quickly by the Army Corps of Engineers, among others, that is something to be proud of.
That's the same short-sightedness. The critique of that, though, I mean, not having to use something like that is similar to the critique of, I'm healthy, I'm okay, I'm bored, so I'm going to go put myself at risk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is when you are not sick, that is success. And if it means using some kind of barrier on your face or washing your hands, whatever it may be, when you don't come down with something, that's the goal. You've done it right. And it's not an excuse for complacency.
Anyway, Cuomo said, he said from day one, the fear is we overwhelm the hospital system, invoking images of people dying in the hallways of Italian hospitals before they could get care. That was a real fear here in New York. In fact, it was happening in Elmhurst. It was happening in various places in the New York area. It was a real thing. At the same time, the state required nursing homes that could not adequately care for coronavirus residents, including being able to quarantine them, to seek help from the Department of Health so that those people could be cared for elsewhere. And that remains the case, Cuomo has said repeatedly. Now, about a week or so ago, Cuomo signed an executive order barring hospitals from sending infected patients back to nursing homes. That same order now requires all nursing home staff be tested for the virus twice a week. He was asked about this recently during one of his daily briefings. What if that order had been in place earlier? Would that have saved lives? And he said people rationalize death in different ways. I don't think there is any logical rationale to say they would be alive today. Well, I don't agree with that. I think a lot of people could have been saved. But the point is, it pales in comparison to the massive amount of incompetence and ignorance and just malice that has been in place from the federal government. And that is why our country is number one. This is something we're number one in. Number of deaths from coronavirus.
And not just at the present, but going forward, given how much misinformation and disinformation is continuing to be perpetuated both by the administration and people who do not believe in viruses or whatever.
Well, they believe in viruses if you know, certain people are in power in certain places. I mean, can you imagine if Obama had been in power when this happened? First of all, the response would likely have been much more competent. But I'll bet a lot of these demonstrators would be much more forceful and much more full of conspiracies because of what Obama was trying to get people to do. So, and you know, this is, you mentioned that there are other parts of the country where this is happening. So true. On the steps of the State House in Columbus, Ohio, shortly before a news conference held by Governor Mike DeWine, Adrienne Robbins, who is a reporter at the local NBC affiliate, found herself on the receiving end of a tirade that was captured on video. That confrontation occurred back on May 1st when Ms. Robbins was checking in with the protesters who had gathered to show their opposition to the restrictions that had been in place since March to guard against the spread of the coronavirus. One protester moved close to the reporter, whose face was partly covered by a surgical mask in keeping with the governor's request that reporters wear protective gear at news conferences. How dare he? Ms. Robbins asked the protester to give her some space to no avail. Raising her voice, the protester complained about the news media in general and the station Ms. Robbins worked for. She accused the reporter of terrifying the general public. Yeah, reporters are making this up. You know the company that you work for is lying to the American people, the protester said, jabbing a finger in the reporter's direction. And you know that what you are doing is wrong. Again, another carbon copy of these people that just say the same thing. As Ms. Robbins stood there, her eyeglasses started fogging up above the mask. You see how nervous you are, the protester said. You're shaking. You're sweating. Eventually, the reporter's glasses slipped from her face and broke on the ground. Ms. Robbins picked them up and walked away. The protester followed, continuing to berate her. Later in an interview, Ms. Robbins said the big thing she said was, we're spreading fear and want to scare people. That's offensive to me. I'm from Fredericktown, Ohio, about an hour north of here. My mom watches these news conferences. My grandparents watch them. I would never want to scare them, but I want them to know what's going on. Journalists in at least three other states have been involved in altercations of anti-lockdown protests in recent weeks. This predates the story from last week here on Long Island. In Germany, reporters covering similar protests have been victims of at least four assaults. That's according to the International Press Institute. Not confined to this country, but boy, this country is leading the pack. Anna Liz Nichols, an intern at Michigan Advance, a nonprofit news site, covered a protest 2 weeks ago that included armed opponents of the state's lockdown. Inside the State House in Lansing, Michigan, she was hit on the left side of her face by a man's rifle. Accidentally, she believes. But for God's sake, people, what are you doing? The nature of the rally was described as peaceful by the police, she said in an interview, but there was no room in the Capitol. There were hardly any masks. People were being careless with their firearms to the point where it didn't matter if they were loaded or not. They could hurt people with them. And there were just so many more examples. We don't have time to get into them all. But, you know, they had to shut down a government hearing because the governor of, I believe, Michigan was being threatened by these people with guns. How is that not terrorism? How is that not the Taliban? You got a bunch of fundamentalists, you know, with guns that are threatening you with physical harm if you don't do what they say in government.
Yeah, they stormed the Congress there, the state Congress or Capitol, and because of the laws in their country, or in their state, Michigan in particular, they are allowed to carry weapons into this building, which in a lot of states is definitely not allowed, but unfortunately that is not the case there. So these leaders voted into power, had people with weaponry in the galleries above them, which is a pretty menacing posture, especially when, you know, you have every right to represent the districts that you were voted and voted to represent. So I just feel like that's a very high stress environment to have to do your work. And it is, I think, a sort of fundamentalist attitude and dissatisfaction, consummate dissatisfaction with everything.
But you know what, Kyle? It works because they get these legislative bodies to shut down. They don't get arrested. They're basically given all this leeway. They get compromises all the time because they're intimidating people. Now imagine if people on the left used the same tactics. I almost am in agreement with the pro-gun people because, yeah, it works. If a bunch of us walked around with guns menacing our leaders and basically saying that we're going to do God knows what to get our way, I'll bet we'd get our way more. But well, what kind of a country would that be?
They need to be reminded that those rights of whatever lunacy they're screaming and whatever machinery they're holding are equal. We all have those rights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So however tough and big you feel, realize there's just as much of that coming from whatever side you disagree with.
Yeah, but they don't have the guns. That's the thing. So that side isn't taken as seriously.
Well, I'm not entirely sure about that. And I don't want to make this a my daddy's bigger than your daddy.
If Trump doesn't win the election in November, those people are going to be out in the streets with their guns. Now, if our side doesn't win the election, don't think that's going to happen. And I think one side, it makes a difference. One side, it won't make any difference. I am against this. Believe me, I am against this. But that is the reality of the situation when you allow people to do this kind of a thing and to just basically distort the Constitution and make it seem like that is your right to intimidate people like this. You wind up with the country you deserve as a result.
Sure. And if the opposition to that doesn't show up, there will at least be representation for the process, I should hope. I'm talking about the Capitol Police. I'm talking about the Sergeant at Arms. I'm talking about even the National Guard. I mean, that is a mechanism that is on the shelf, ready to go. If they want to tool up and they want to bark and scream at people, there's plenty of people with riot gear that will be there and welcome their screams.
Yeah, except, like I said, they will move a lot quicker against an unarmed crowd than they will against these people because they are intimidated. That is the whole point. They want to intimidate people, including the police, including the politicians, including the leaders. And it works. And that needs to be looked at. That needs to be looked at.
I think they're more fearful of becoming wet in that situation than you might realize.
Who?
People running around with weaponry, trying to get some message across in the face of interrupting a change of power or intimidating members of our leadership who are voted into office. I think there would be security. I mean, even at this protest, there was Suffolk County Police around this reporter.
Yeah,
I don't think they were doing a very good job.
They didn't do anything.
They just kind of watched.
This guy was being harassed by one of them, threatened with coronavirus, basically. They didn't know he had already had it. I don't even know if that's good enough. But they didn't step in and stop that.
They didn't really. They were escorting him, in other words, shadowing him there. But it didn't. I mean, he wasn't without some level of supervision from what I read was a lot of police there. and barricades and management, so to speak. So I don't know. I think there are flukes in some of these situations around the country. But, yeah, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there will be just an incredible, coordinated, overwhelming amount of militias or whatever is nigh. But I don't think it will go completely unopposed. I think you'd be surprised at how many people find some of those tactics abhorrent when we do have processes in place, like voting.
Yeah, but I'm really getting tired of waiting for voting, because the Republicans seem to have that figured out a lot better than the Democrats do. They're able to vote people into power with less votes. You know, they get the minority and they're able to win anyway. They're able to stack the Supreme Court and all these other federal courts for life. They know how to play the game, and the other side needs to learn how to play that game or change the game. Quickly, we have not heard this story, but it kind of falls into line. The woman behind Florida's digital coronavirus dashboard claims she's been booted from her post for refusing to doctor data to support the state's plan to reopen. Rebecca Jones said that for reasons beyond my division's control, she was removed from her position as the architect and manager of the Sunshine State's interactive site on May 5th. In an email to a local CBS affiliate, she said her removal was not voluntary. It was because she refused to manually change data to drum up support for the plan to reopen. So this kind of thing is happening all over the place. You hear about some, you don't hear about others. So that's kind of shameful. All right, it's time to move on to our sustaining feature. You know, this computer screen is so hard to see with this reflective screen. Okay, here we go. And I see I hit the wrong thing. That is why. Okay.
We won? We won an award?
No, we didn't win anything. Where is it? That's not that. Okay, it's this one here. It's time for another exciting edition of Films of the Year That Was, where we journey back into the past, but the past is getting closer and closer to us, and review a film that won the Academy Award. And we are up to 1973. Actually, we're still in 1973. We saw the international winner last week, and this week we saw the domestic winner, which was a film that I had never seen before and you had seen. It's called The Sting.
Yeah, actually our current theme for this segment is pretty close to The Entertainer, which is a famous track from that movie.
Except this is the actual theme from The Sting. I had that queued up.
Nice. Well done.
And this was a hit when I was a kid, if you can believe that. It was on all the AM radio stations. It was actually in the top 40. Marvin Hamlisch with The Entertainer from The Sting. And just hearing that song brought back memories of that era, and now it brings back memories of the film, because now I've seen it.
And I think it's a popular ice cream truck sound, too.
No, it's not.
No?
Is it an ice cream truck that does this?
I don't know, maybe not. Maybe the cheap ones.
Well, they got some copyright bills to pay, I think, if they are doing that.
Cut-rate ice cream truck. Well, anyway, the plot is post-depression, starting with Grifter in Joliet, who makes a hit on somebody, a con. Basically, they do kind of a thing where one guy's injured, another guy runs to the rescue, and they fool a guy who himself was picking up a cash, and they kind of swindle him out of all this money by running kind of a street con on him.
Yeah, they fooled me for sure.
Exactly. He turns out to retaliate because he himself is involved in the racketeering and cons.
So basically, what they do is, what I learned about this, and I watched the film twice. I think it's a good idea to watch films twice sometimes, especially if they're complex. And this is kind of complex. There's a lot going on. Some of it's unbelievable, I think. But one thing that becomes clear is that these guys... the leads are Paul Newman and Robert Redford. I'd never heard of them before, and it's a shame they didn't really do anything else other than this. But they did a fine job, you know, in this film, and they basically are the con men that don't steal money. They basically rely on people to become greedy, and if they become greedy and try to rip off somebody else, they find themselves with a bunch of tissue paper instead of money. and they lose everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was fascinating. And in the initial scam where the one of his partners retires and is ultimately got by the sort of mobster guys or mafia type, it's by a slip. He shows him how he's going to, like, secure his money, and he pulls out, after demonstrating, a fake stack of money. And that's, like, the tissue paper example for counterfeit bills. And then they make off with the actual cash. Of course, it does not go unnoticed. And he has to eventually flee to Chicago to meet, where he meets Longman, right?
Bob Longman?
No, not Bob Longman. It's Luther and Joe Erie. And so Joe flees, right?
I'm bad with names.
To meet Henry Gondorf in Chicago to teach him how to really con.
I'm told apparently those two actors did do other films. Okay, I didn't know that. I don't know. But, yeah, okay, so they went to Chicago. They went to Joliet, Illinois?
They start out, yeah.
So I don't know where that is.
They do this small hustle in Joliet, and he eventually flees to Chicago.
If you're listening in Joliet, Illinois, write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd like to hear from you, and we'll read your letter on the air.
After Luther puts him on to this other friend of his that'll kind of show him the trades, the tricks of the trade for running a big con, which itself is fascinating in how much they produce it. They do a phony off-track betting scheme as The
God.
Wire.
Yeah.
They produce this whole betting room.
They got hundreds of people involved in this thing just to get even with this guy. Well, more than even, to get a whole lot of money from him. But still, wow. Yeah, a wire room, which basically, what is that? That's like betting on horses, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even though it was, I guess, outdated technologically. But even when they're just trying to hook and get on this sort of big Chicago bookie or guy that they want to swindle, they get on his radar by playing a card game, and that they themselves work out as a way to make him greedy in double crossing one another, which is the same thing as the early robbery.
The way the con works is a train. They're taking a train from New York to Chicago because this guy, this mobster, goes back and forth between those places. And they're on this really, and it's a real train, too, that used to run, a really first-class train. And there's this poker game that takes place on this train with that guy. And the idea is for Paul Newman to play the game and cheat and win. Now, the guy cheats as well, but Paul Newman is supposed to act like he's drunk and fool the guy. And then, after that's over, and by the way, the mobster's wallet has been stolen by someone else who's working with him on the train, just so that when the game is over and he reaches for his wallet, it's not there and it looks like he's welching on what he owes. At that point, Robert Redford goes to collect the money from this guy's room on this train, and at that point, he reveals that he's working against Paul Newman and is upset at him because he cheats and steals money.
And, oh, by the way, here's your wallet back without the money. I already got all your money.
Yeah, so basically, the mobster then believes Robert Redford, whatever he says. So then when they finally get to Chicago, he shows him this room where people are betting on horse races, and he has kind of an antagonistic relationship with Paul Newman, and the mobster, of course, has no reason to doubt that.
But he wants proof that the wire itself works, and once it does, he ante's up this huge amount of money.
After I think two other attempts to prove that it works, and basically the way that it works, the way they explain it to him, is that they are controlling a Western Union office, and the Western Union office delays the results of the race for a minute or two, enough time for them to always bet on the horse that wins. And they just do this elaborate thing where the guy trusts them and is eventually convinced to do the wrong thing. And I'll say this, the film really had me going. I thought it was going to go one way, and it fooled me. It fooled me. I'm cynical about these things. I figure, you know, I know it all, but no, I didn't know this. It surprised me.
I totally misremembered it. I thought it was a black and white film. I thought that it was just a good guys, bad guys, you know, the feds running a sting on some criminal. But I was probably very, very young when I saw it, and I probably watched it on television.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing it again, I've said this over and over again, we're really lucky at this point in time to be watching high-definition prints and good scans of a lot of these films.
It's yeah.
Incredible restoration. It's a real treat to see it on in full display and really soak up the story, which is, again, unlike anything I'd remembered.
But if I can just complain for a second about the Blu-ray that we got, it doesn't have a menu. Basically, you put it in and it starts playing the film. Now, if you pause, there's a menu selection. You can go there, but then the film continues to play with the menu on display as well. It's so badly set up. For God's sake, people, it's the Sting. You can do a good job with a Blu-ray. I don't know what these people are thinking.
Authoring, as I think you've experienced, is not trivial with DVDs, and Blu-rays are no exception. The software is sparse, and often it is badly done. Or
yeah, I'd have
done.
To say it took effort to make it this bad.
Yeah, and it's an afterthought. Usually they're working so hard on restoring the film, they're putting together the audio, they're assembling interviews with people for extra features. The last part is actually assembling that into a usable disc.
Well, we have to stop our... Oh, the train's going by now, too. That is our film feature for today. Hopefully next week we will be up to 1974. We'll see what awaits us there. As this freight train rolls by, any final words, Kyle? Because we do have to vacate the studios. Finn is coming up next, I understand, at 7 o'clock from another remote location.
Final words? Well, my final words are, I don't know, I'm looking forward to some of the space stuff that I mentioned in the beginning of the show.
Being launched into space, yes.
Yeah, well, the more people, the merrier, yes. And if they're American, well, good for them, too.
Well, I want to just basically encourage people to stand up to nonsense and don't listen to people that are basically ignoring science and doing stupid things. Our commander-in-chief, particularly, taking a dangerous drug himself. You know what? I'm all for it. If he wants to take this stupid drug that has absolutely no proof of doing anything for coronavirus... You know, try the bleach too. Maybe that'll work. Whatever you want
to
do, just don't make other people do it. You know. But when he went to the mask factory, somebody was playing "Live and Let Die," right? And
yep.
And that was an act of basically rebellion to do that, to play that at top volume, and it wasn't the original version, right?
I'm not entirely sure. I don't know that song very, very well. It was some variation. I thought it was like a classic rock station, maybe, that played another artist playing. I don't know.
Well, it might have been, but this is the original version, and I figure it's from 1973, the year that we saw the film, so it kind of fits. So we're going to play that, go into the 7 o'clock celebration, and then, Finn, we'll see you next time. Write to us, otw@2600.com.
So long.
You were young and your heart was an open book. You used to say, live and let live.
You know you did.
But if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you live and let die.
WUSB, Stony Brook.